we need to bear in mind that there's another part of Alaska that gets even more tanker traffic of a different kind, and that is in Cook Inlet. And we need to make sure that there's a safety margin there. Also, things like groundwater pollution, solid waste, and hazardous sites, all of those are part of the Alaskan environment now, as much as they are in other parts of the country, and we need to deal with them systematically and to prevent them from occurring.
Thank you, Fairbanks. We have another caller coming up from Nome. Our guest is the state's Conservation Commissioner, Dennis Kelso. Nome, good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. I'd like to ask Commissioner Kelso why he did not handle the Exxon spill as he does, or his agency does, the mining industry's pollution of streams and rivers. When that happens, the first thing that happens is that the miner is shut down, which in the case of small miners usually makes them go bankrupt. And that's been indicated several times in the past 3 or 4 years in Fairbanks, where people just can't afford to mine anymore. And if he had handled the Exxon spill in the same manner by stopping Exxon from shipping oil through the Valdez port, they probably would have cleaned it up a lot faster. I realize the state would have lost some revenue in the meantime, but I think that probably, 2 or 3 weeks of revenue lost would have been a good payment for getting Exxon to clean the spill up within those 2 weeks.
Well, first of all, you're not accurate in how you describe the way we deal with miners. We have a much more cooperative relationship than what you just described. But if somebody's going to do as much damage as you just suggested, maybe they should be shut down. We just don't think that the mining operations that you described are the same kind of threat, but we do think they should operate according to the rules as well. As far as Exxon goes, the limitations on shutting down Exxon's use of the pipeline and so forth are legal limitations. The pipeline delivers about 20% of the United States' daily requirement of energy, of petroleum energy, and so the decision to shut down the pipeline is a very serious one, nationally as well as for the state of Alaska. The point is, I think Alaskans want to have a responsible oil industry as well as, say, a responsible mining industry. And to do that, we have to have rules that are followed, and we have to have companies that are willing not only to say that they will carry out a proper response, but to be able to do it, and then to do it if there is a problem.
Thank you. Our guest has been the state's Conservation Commissioner, Dennis Kelso. Moving along, the Exxon Valdez oil spill and the unprecedented cleanup effort this summer created an economic boom that reached throughout Alaska. In Kotzebue, high school graduate Laka Peacock got a job with a huge floating barge hotel housing Exxon employees. In 2 months, he was able to save enough money to pay for an entire year's college tuition.
I didn't know for sure if I was going to be able to go to college with the amount of money I had unless I got that job. And when I did get it, I was figuring on trying to work as much overtime as I could to get the amount of money I needed, and I did. I got the amount of money I needed.
Peacock saved $8,000 while working as a housekeeper on a barge providing housing for Exxon and Vico executives as well as oil spill workers. He spent 12-hour days, 7 days a week as a housekeeper, making beds, cleaning bathrooms, vacuuming, and polishing mirrors. Part of his duties included a stint in the boat's kitchen. None of his time was spent cleaning oil off the beaches. Instead, he was part of a huge support system organized by Exxon to get work crews out on some of the world's most remote beaches. Peacock says his time away from home also gave him a taste of what it'll be like to go away for college.
I was away for 2 months, with just being back to my parents for 2 weeks, and so it was good to be away from home. Like, I'm going to have to do in college, I'm going to be away from home for like 2.5 months before I come back for Christmas, so it was good in that way.
Laka Peacock began classes this fall at Seattle Pacific University, in part thanks to the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
The number here to call is
800-235-1100.
And our guest in the studio right now is Otto Harrison. He has been the voice of Exxon for many this summer. He's the general manager of the company's Valdez operations, and he oversees all aspects of the Prince William Sound oil spill cleanup. Good morning, Mr. Harrison. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Can you tell us, please, Exxon's perspective on this? You have pulled out of Prince William Sound, and you feel that you have reached your goal in the cleanup.
I would say that we've changed the phase of our operation. We have not pulled out. We were not able to continue in the severe weather, the kind of operation we conducted this summer, and we have a very intensive program for this winter. And I would say the phase of the operation has changed. We're still here, still with a lot of people on site, a very large effort for this winter.
Dennis Kelso just told us that there's no guarantee from you that you will follow up this spring, nor that the state will be able to supervise your activities. Are you ready to tell us now that you've changed your mind about that and you're going to let the state oversee your continued operation this spring?
First, let me say about the spring, there are none of us that know what the shorelines will look like in the spring or what the condition of the oil will be, where oil exists, if any. And we're really saying you can't define a plan until you know that. As far as the state supervising, you know that the legislation requires that there is a federal on-scene commander, that is the Coast Guard. And we're obliged to follow Coast Guard direction in this area.
Our guest is Otto Harrison, who's been Exxon's on-scene coordinator, the voice of Exxon for the recent portion of the cleanup. He's here to answer your calls, and we have a caller from Kodiak standing by. Good morning, Kodiak. You're on the air with Otto Harrison.
Yes, good morning. I would like to make a comment from Kodiak, and that is what I would like to see with an increase in communications.
First, can I ask you to turn your radio down in the background, please?
Yes, I would like to see an increase in communication so that the residents and the people could react to or apply pressure to whoever they would be. For instance, these legislation that's coming up, it's real hard to get a handle on what's going on. If we could have maybe a communication system going on where people could get a handle on what's going on and put pressure.
Okay, well, I'm not the right one to answer on legislation, but let me mention on communication, and particularly in the cities and villages of Kodiak, which are very important to us. We do have proposals in front of each village and city at the moment, which include a regular communication back to us on the condition of their shorelines and beaches. And we consider that local feedback and information to be very important for the winter program.
Kodiak, do you have some more questions for us?
No, that's it.
No, we've heard from Kodiak quite a bit through the latter part of the summer that they've been dissatisfied with the kind of communication they've had with Exxon, with the kind of chain of command and decision-making that goes on there. What, you know, in the course of your winter plan, what are you doing to improve that?
What we have offered to each village and city in Kodiak is a package which includes them doing monitoring on shorelines that they select that are important to them, and to feedback that into our command center on a regular basis so that we have their information to supplement our on-site efforts. And if we need to bring emergency response capability in that area, we've got their immediate feedback. I'm not sure that will solve all communication problems, but we're very hopeful it will substantially improve it.
Our guest this morning right now is Otto Harrison from Exxon. The number to call to talk to him is 800-325-1100.
And we have a caller standing by right now from Valdez. Good morning, Valdez. What's your question?
Hello.
Good morning, Valdez. What's your question?
Well, I just have a comment and a question. I would like to know if there is anybody out there supervising the cleanup from the state, because I was out there earlier on in the spill, and I did find oiled birds while I was cleaning up the beach, and my supervisor told me to hide the oil birds in oil bags and stash them among the oil, that Exxon did not need the publicity. And I wondered if that was still happening.
Well, if that happened, I would say that, number one, I would apologize to you. That's a direct violation of the instructions we gave to people. We continually repeated those instructions. We intend to conduct our operation to the highest ethical standards that I know how to implement. We operated and functioned a very active bird rescue and pickup campaign, and I hope that nobody else had the experience you did.
Okay, thank you. That was my question.
Yeah, Mr. Harrison, we've talked to people in the last few days who say that there are still bird casualties, and in fact, we did a story just the other day showing that some, or suggesting at least, that some of the migrating birds that have died were not really victims of oil. But I've heard from people in the Kenai Fjords who say that there are, in fact, oiled birds. There are, in fact, birds and other animals continuing to be injured by oil on the beaches. And yet you said the other day at the Exxon sort of closing celebration that you felt that the beaches have been environmentally stabilized and that that meant, in your words, that they would be no more harm to wildlife.
That's a multifaceted question, so let me answer in a couple of pieces, if you will. First of all, there have been a considerable amount of dead bird pickup in the southern part of Kodiak. To the best data that scientists are providing now, that's largely from natural causes. And while none of us like for that to happen, it does not appear to be substantially oil-related. In the other areas, we're finding very few reported animal incidents, which we're pleased about. We're distressed when there are any. Our problem is that the bird pickup and animal, or the otter pickup efforts, were conducted in small boats. And these boats generally need to get out to remote areas where these animals reside. And they're just not safe to do during wintertime operations. At the southern end of Kodiak is a long way from anywhere when you're in a small boat. We have agreed with the Department of Fish and Wildlife that we would provide extensive monitoring capability to supplement their efforts or complement their efforts for the migrating flocks, and we're prepared to do that.
We're talking right now to Otto Harrison, who is the general manager of Exxon Valdez's operations, and our number to call is 800-325-1100. We've got a caller standing by right now. We'd like to take another call. Good morning. Are you out there?
Yes, are you talking to me?
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
tell us where you're calling from.
Anchorage.
You're calling from Anchorage.
I have two concerns. One, the Eagle Center in Anchorage still needs funding. I understand Exxon is not doing anything more to help them. The other thing is a long-term problem. I know a little bit about maritime law, and right now, legally, it might be argued that Exxon is only liable for the value of the product left on the boat and the value of the boat after the accident. They obviously spent more money than that. My question, I guess, is, are they going to use this as a legal defense to say to the people who are suing them, and I'll get to court 5 years or 10 years from now, that,
you know, we'd like to concentrate our questions
on
things
really,
that our guests can deal with.
Let me finish this quickly. That they have already paid out more than they were liable for, and therefore they're no longer liable for anything else. Thank you.
Let me answer the Eagle part first. We just got a request yesterday to provide some emergency generation capability for the Eagle Center, and I directed our folks to find if we had a compatible generator that would do that. I don't know whether they found it today or not, but we're certainly not ignoring the Eagle Center. We have conducted the Eagle rescue efforts, and that effort will be winding down just now, but it's operated up until this point. I am not an expert on the second question, which is maritime law. I can only tell you that we've obviously functioned without that concern in mind. we're paying out $100 million in claims in addition to what we spent on the spill cleanup operation. So we're trying to act in the most responsible, responsive manner we know how to do.
Thank you. You know, we've heard a lot in the last days of the cleanup about the various cleanup methods that were being tried, about the controversy over some of the cleanup methods. We have a caller on the line right now whom we understand knows something at least about an innovative cleanup method. Good morning, caller. You're on the line.
Yes, good morning. I became aware of a product that could have been used in this spill here in Alaska when it first happened. And this is an item that you throw on the water, that you vacuum up, and it picks up all the oil. Since then, I've recommended this to a number of people throughout the state. And I've had real trouble getting to Exxon now laboratories in Louisiana. Notified the Exxon purchasing department in Houston. The product was available and was very acceptable by Exxon.
Tell us about the product.
The product is an absorbent material. It is non-toxic, biodegradable. Has all the qualities that you need in a product to clean up such a thing as oil. But it also picks up the oil. You can separate the oil from the water with this product.
Caller, can you just tell us a little more about it? Is it something like a paper towel?
It comes in it's shredded material.
Mm-hmm.
And you just throw it out on the water. It will float for 24 hours. You can pick it up with a heavy duty vacuum. You can burn the material with not an excess amount of, you know, ash and so forth. It burns almost down to nothing.
Just in general terms, maybe we can take the caller's question and ask you, Otto, what Exxon is doing. The state's going into promising an extensive research program into other technologies for picking up oil. They specified, in fact, that they were more interested in what they called mechanical and practical means rather than complex and chemical means. What should people do if they have what they think are good ideas about products for Exxon, and what's Exxon doing for further research?
That is a good question, and the caller was interested in hearing her comments. There are about 1,300 products that have been submitted to us, and our laboratories have gone through a screening process on those. Coast Guard laboratories have done the same thing. The top two that came out of those, which were bioremediation and a beach cleaning agent, we have tried. Warm water washing was another one of those. Of course, it was a major part of the program. We really are dividing our program for the wintertime research into two aspects. We are looking at basically chemistry and physical chemistry, and that's being done in our research organization in New Jersey called Exxon Research and Engineering. We're also looking at improved mechanical means. These fit better ways to do things mechanically. This is being done by a research lab in Houston called Exxon Production Research. And we will work on this very hard through the wintertime with a large reservoir of scientists. Our overall science program has about 400 people involved through the winter, both working on environmental studies in the waters and on the shoreline, as well as this research.
And Mr. Harrison, of all the work that you've done, of all the cleanup operations, which have you found to be the most successful?
Well, we have been extremely grateful about the results we're receiving with bioremediation. It's worked much better than we had any reason to anticipate. So we're pleased about that one.
And for our listeners out there, explain bioremediation.
Okay. Thank you. What we've done is we've added fertilizer to the beach that allows the natural microbes, or the small bugs that normally reside in the intertidal zone, to grow faster. And growing faster, to balance their diet, they eat the oil that's there also. And this is a joint project that we did with the US EPA. It was an idea that came out of the research lab into the field over the summertime. We've been able to actually apply it on about 70 miles of beach if we were, most generally if we were on the beach. And we're just very, very grateful about the results we've seen tonight.
Thank you. Our guest is Otto Harrison, general manager of Exxon's cleanup effort. And he's here for your calls. We have a caller from Juneau standing by. Good morning, Juneau. You're on the line with Otto Harrison.
Hello? Yes, my name is Joyce Levine, and I'm calling from Juneau. And I guess my concern was that when you do business with a company and you are not satisfied with the company that you're doing business, you take your business elsewhere. And I feel that myself and a lot of people in Alaska are dissatisfied with the business that we have done with Exxon on the pipeline. Being that Exxon is a part of a major corporation, the Standard Oil Trust, which includes Exxon, Chevron, Standard, ARCO, Esso, Mobil, American, Sinclair, Humble, etc. I was wondering if Alaska has ever considered doing business on the pipeline with another oil company who would have more respect for the wildlife and environment in Alaska.
Well, I think maybe Mr. Harrison can address that, but I think that maybe there's more to your question. It sounds like you're very angry and concerned that that Exxon is not being a good neighbor.
Yes, I believe that. There were several points where, just the mistakes that had been made, not having a capable person at the helm. The question of a double hull, which even came up in the Senate, that I understand that one of my senators voted against.
You know, we have to deal with questions though, that our guest can deal with and respond to. I don't think Mr. Harrison can respond to legislative questions or legal questions, but he can certainly respond to cleanup questions, and that's what we're here for. Do you have a cleanup question?
Yes, okay. To prove that Exxon would be a good person to do business with, if they want to hold that trust in us as Alaskans, I was wondering what they are going to give to Alaskans to make us feel that they are going to do the utmost that they can to clean up and not just say that they work till September 15th and that's it, and they'll put a small crew on next spring or something. What good feeling are they going to give us to make us feel like they're going to be totally responsible for this cleanup?
Thank you.
I would suggest to you that the only thing I know to do to regain the trust, and your trust is very important to us, Joyce, is we've got to finish the job, and that's what we're all about. Let me say in general, we've had a number of critics, and I'm not surprised that we've had critics. I think this was a tragedy. It was a shocking tragedy to many people, and I'm not surprised we have critics. I would say that we would like all the help we can get from those critics. And the best example I know of is the Port Ola Fishermen's Union. They've been active critics, but also active, constructive participants in getting the job done. And gosh, we need all the help that we can get in doing the job right.
Thank you. Our guest is Otto Harrison. The way to talk to him is to call us toll-free at 800-325-1100. We have a caller now from Juneau standing by. Good morning, Juneau. You're on the line with Otto Harrison.
Good morning. I have a question for Mr. Harrison. I think it was put to him earlier, and I didn't quite get a direct answer from him. I didn't put the question, but someone else did. My question is, Exxon has touted its cleanup effort and said how beaches are environmentally stabilized and so forth, and yet we keep getting reports of oil dead birds are still out there and are still being oiled, and I'm wondering how Mr. Harrison reconciles these reports with their assertion that the cleanup is successful and the beaches are not toxic for wildlife.
I think that most of the reports you're hearing on birds are coming out of Kodiak, where the kill, unfortunately, is real, but it's largely natural. In terms of environmentally stable, we've revisited most of these beaches, and I've been on a good number of them, and I believe that we have these beaches to the point that they're not going to interfere with otters and seals and birds. That was an objective from the start. I think that we have substantially achieved that objective. We still have more to do. We're not quitting. We're still here. We have an extremely active program. We have one of the world's most intensive science programs going on this winter. And we're going to be working with you and with everyone else to get the best understanding possible of the situation.
Caller, we have time for just one brief follow-up question, if you have one.
That's fine to say that you're, you know, it just seems like you keep denying the evidence. It keeps coming in, and I think you might be overestimating the cleanup effort last year. I guess that's not a question, that's just a comment.
Thank you. We have heard, well, in fact, you held up a rock at that celebration this week and described it as environmentally stable, a product, I think, of bioremediation. And yet that hasn't even been allowed in some places like the Kenai Fjords National Park. What do you do in those cases where you can't ensure that it's environmentally stable?
Basically, in those areas, such as the fjords and the national parks, the oil was much lighter than it was in Prince William Sound. And in addition, some of those areas are not what we call high energy areas. They're not subject to wave action as high. The combination of lighter impact and low energy areas indicated that perhaps bioremediation was not the environmentally preferred answer in those cases. So we didn't do that. So in those areas, there was primarily mechanical pickup. There has been some limited amount of hot water washing. And in addition, there has been some bioremediation in about 2 miles of areas outside of Prince William Sound where it looked feasible.
Thank you. We'll be asking our national audience to join us in the next hour, and Otto Harrison will stay with us. This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.
The Alaska Oil Spill, a nationwide call-in, is produced by the Alaska Public Radio Network in partnership with American Public Radio. Spill, a nationwide call-in. I'm Pat Bodner.
And I'm Corey Flintoff. We're broadcasting from Alaska, where yesterday the Exxon Corporation brought a billion-dollar cleanup effort to an end. The man who directed that project is with us now in our studios, and you're invited to talk with him directly during in the first part of our program. We hope to hear from some of the many Alaskans who've spent their summers working on the beaches. We've also invited decision-makers to participate in the program. A major political battle's been spurred in the nation's capital by the Exxon Valdez spill.
Have you had a chance to detect whether or not any noticeable amount of oil has dropped out of any tanks, and if so, which tanks are they on?
The initial figure is 138,000.
Coast Guard Commander Steve McCall was shocked when he heard the estimate from the Exxon Valdez impaled on a reef that was well known to shippers. A catastrophic amount of oil was on the water. By the time the leak was stopped, it was more than 240,000 barrels. Now the state government in Alaska insists 115,000 of them are still unaccounted for. In a moment, we'll ask the man in charge of the oil spill cleanup effort for his view on this. But first, let's look back down the path of the spill with reporter Steve Heimel.
Few, if any, Alaskans had ever pictured it happening. Even as the crude oil was boiling out of the tanker's hull, they thought it would surely be contained and recover. It wasn't until after the winds came up and pushed it deep into Prince William Sound that it took hold of their hearts as it flooded the shores of a succession of islands. Naked, Seal, Smith, Eleanor, Green, and then Night Island, where they go to watch the whales, and where Kim Hager used to go to catch pink salmon.
There's no place as beautiful as Prince William Sound, and it's clean and it's pretty, and, you know, there's just nothing like it, and it's just all gone down the tubes.
First, a shrimp fishery was closed. Then it was herring. The wildlife casualties began to be seen. Kathy Frost of the Alaska Fish and Game Department was one of the first to spot the casualties.
We did boat surveys today from 200 meters off the beach. You still don't see the oil birds until you actually get on the beach. Some of them you darn near step on before you see them.
Soon the wildlife deaths were in the thousands, and then tens of thousands. Television crews plastered screens across the nation with unforgettable images of wilderness stained with oil. Tour boat owners watched cancellations pour in. The summer was out of the question for the month-long kayak trips led by the National Outdoor Leadership School. Marketing Director John Guillen saw every one of their campsites ruined by the oil.
You know, it has an impact. I mean, it really does. I mean, that place is gorgeous. I hate to not give you a straight answer on it, but it's gorgeous. I guess that's all I can say.
The spill soon evolved into a public relations disaster for the Exxon Corporation. During the first days, Exxon was very open about its progress in controlling the oil. Exxon Shipping President Frank Iorossi grew more and more exhausted, facing countless news conferences.
What's there? Still, I don't know. I have to tell you, it's a lot. You know, we are dealing with the largest spill that this country's ever seen.
But the public forums dwindled, and so too did the flow of information from Exxon. The price of oil went up, and there were suspicions of gouging. And the beaches stayed black with oil, giving reporters like Bob King plenty of time to remind the public that the promised cleanup from Exxon was very slow to get moving.
There are beautiful skies up above in the distance. There are snow-capped mountains. I'm surrounded by green trees. Some of the most gorgeous scenery one might imagine. Beneath my feet, however, is at least an inch or two of oil pooled in all the cracks and crevices of all the rocks, covering the seaweed. There are still pans of oil out on the water washing ashore. Higher up on the beach, towards the high tide line, the concentration of oil is the thickest. And there's where you find many of the dead seabirds. There's absolutely no sign of any wildlife in this area. There's no sound of birds, no sound.
While fishermen backed by the state government were on their way to protect their salmon hatcheries with booms within hours, it was 15 days before any substantial shoreline cleanup effort was underway. As the story was replaced by more urgent events in the national headlines, Alaskans watched in horror as a long black tongue of oil escaped Prince William Sound entirely. Jackie Michel of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration warned if the cleanup didn't get moving, it was just the beginning.
Because that oil, if they don't get it now, it will continue to be migrated, you know, pushed downwind further and hit other areas, smearing it over large areas.
This Tuesday, the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation was estimating the total oiled shoreline outside Prince William Sound at 833 miles. The heaviest wildlife casualties were outside the sound. and so is the despoilment of two national parks so massive that it makes the Yellowstone destruction look like a campfire. Those closest to the spill area know the oil is still there, and commitments from Exxon to deal with the loose oil are uncertain. The state government has decided to mount an effort of its own. Governor Steve Cooper, in announcing the effort, said he did not wish to fault Exxon, but the state will continue its efforts to control the oil and research new technologies for cleaning the oil shorelines through the winter. The cleanup effort to date has, by anyone's reckoning, been massive. Exxon's prime contractor has spent $700 million on the effort. Exxon has told the Coast Guard that they will be ready to go back to work in the spring. But the uncertainties remain. The impact on fisheries is unknown. And those who rely on the shoreline for much of their diet have seen many of their gathering areas polluted. While the spill has prompted a rush of donations to environmental interest groups, Alaskans are uncertain that the world really knows their story. For the Alaska Public Radio Network, I'm Steve Hyman.
This is Pat Bodner in Anchorage. Otto Harrison has been the voice of Exxon for many this summer. He's the general manager of the company's Valdez operations. He oversees all aspects of the Prince William Sound oil spill cleanup, and he joins us in our studio in Anchorage. Good morning, Mr. Harrison. Thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Exxon, as of yesterday, announced it had reached its goal and in the cleanup. How has Exxon revised that goal over the last 6 months?
Over the last 6 months, we found, of course, that the amount of shoreline to be cleaned up was significantly larger than we had in our main plans. We were able to get that job treated with all that shoreline under treatment through the summertime program, and we were pleased that we were able to achieve that. We have also extended our plans through the winter time so that we have an active strike force available through the winter. We have an active call-up team available through the winter. And we've revised a plan to allow us to gather extensive scientific data through the winter to put us in the best position to be ready for whatever is needed next spring, if anything is needed.
You know, critics have claimed that Exxon has been playing a numbers game here, a mileage numbers game, talking about miles oiled and miles treated, or in fact, early in the year we were talking about cleanup, later we were calling it treatment, later we were calling it environmental stabilization. What is going on here? What's the final goal? What is environmental stabilization? What does it really mean?
Now, let me go back to the total pictures. You know, we're talking about 1,100 miles, which were surveyed, nearly 1,100 miles, which were surveyed, and it was decided those miles of beaches should receive some level of treatment. Those were scientifically surveyed by biologists, oil measurement experts. There was an archaeologist on the team to be sure that we did it right. Of that, there were only about 60 miles of what we call heavily oiled. Most of the attention and discussion and definition is focused in that heavily oiled area. For those other miles, and that's over 1,000 other miles, which were lightly to moderately impacted, those beaches are environmentally stable, and in some of them, by anybody's definition, hundreds of miles of them, they're clean. Within the 60 miles of heavily oiled area, and I would point out to you there are three specific ones that I'd pick up. This is Smith Island, Sleepy Bay at Latouche, and Point Helen at Knight Island. Places like this were just bioremediated in the last day or two.
That means treated with fertilizer.
That means treated with fertilizer. Those beaches won't reach that environmentally stabilized point for probably 4 to 6 weeks. But with those exceptions, which I qualified all the time, we think we have substantially left the area, an area what you refer to correctly as environmentally stabilized, an area which is not harmful to birds, otters, seals, the normal wildlife that lives in the area. And in addition, we're trying to have it so that it does not inhibit subsistence hunting and fishing or the long-term commercial fishing operations.
Now, Mr. Harrison, environmentally clean, help us out here. Exactly what does this term mean and how much oil is still left? In other words, you initially planned to restore the beaches to their pristine character the way the beaches were before the oil spill. Environmentally stable is something that is not anywhere near that. How much oil is still left when a beach is environmentally stable?
There can be and is oil left on the rock sometimes in a very in a form that's on the rock that it does not rub off on the animals and birds. We're not saying that all of that oil is removed. We're not saying that it is aesthetically clean to look at. But what we are saying is that the normal intertidal marine community is reestablishing itself. And you can see that happening in the air. You can look out and you'll be able to see that the water is clean. The oil is not sheening on the water. That's not true on those three beaches that I mentioned earlier, but that will happen. And that's our objective, is see that we're not having oil sheening out on the water, to see that we're not damaging the wildlife that's accumulated on the beaches. Unfortunately, I cannot tell you that that removed all the oil.
The telephone number to call is 800-325-1100. Otto Harrison is in the studios with us. He's the general manager of Exxon's Valdez operations. If you have questions, please call us at 800-325-1100.
Otto Harrison is, of course, Exxon's top man on the cleanup in Alaska, and this is your chance to talk to him. We have a call. Our first caller is from Kenai, Alaska. Good morning, Kenai. You're on the air.
I was just working on the pipeline at Tagan when the oil was flowing. I volunteered and was trained as a part of the spill crew. Our orders on something like that, on a catastrophic spill, was to boom and burn just as soon as we possibly could while the light ends were there. I'd like to know why they changed their attitudes after all those years, and who was the one that made the decision to change. And without any hedging, I'd like to know who. I'll hang up now and listen.
Okay, unfortunately, I was not here during those first few days. I arrived here on April the 5th. By April the 5th, the oil had emulsified to a state that would not burn at that point, and I'm just not the right one to answer on the burn in the first few days.
Otto Harrison is the voice of Exxon for many people this summer. He's the general manager of the company's Valdez operations, and he's in our studio in Anchorage, Alaska. The number here is 800-325-1100. Mr. Harrison, Alaska announced yesterday it's beginning its winter cleanup, and you have just told us that Exxon is going to maintain its presence here throughout the winter. Nevertheless, 10,000 workers were laid off, and will continue to be moved out of the operation. Exactly how many people are involved in Exxon's portion of the winter cleanup?
In our winter cleanup, we have about nearly 380 people directly employed in Alaska. We have about 250 people in Alaska on call-up list, and we have a little over 300 people that are working in laboratories and appropriate institutional facilities within the lower 48. About 950 people all told that are either directly working or available for call-up.
This is your chance to talk to Exxon's top man on the cleanup in Alaska. He's Otto Harrison. He's here in our studios, and the number to call is 800-325-1100. We have a caller on the line from Clinton, Utah. Clinton, you're on the air with Otto Harrison.
Thank you. And Mr. Harrison, it doesn't seem like that many people are going to be sufficient to take care of the past devastation. But my problem I'd like to ask is, how is Exxon prepared to invest future profits from North Slope oil in the prevention of such a catastrophic incident?
You'll stay on the line with us, caller. We'll let Mr. Harrison answer.
We have a lot of people that are looking at contingency plans and prevention plans for the future. I have not been directly involved in that. I've been primarily focusing all of my attention and resources on cleaning up the waters and shoreline. So we need someone else to answer that for you. I'm sorry, I'm just not the right person.
Why can't you keep a whole crew on there and stick it out and with the cleanup of the recent devastation? It seems like the number of people that you have kept there are not anywhere near the number of people that they need to take care of the devastation, and I think a good hard look at future possible catastrophic incidents should be a big part of Exxon's investment of their profits.
Okay, that's a good question. Let me just expand on that a little bit. Basically, our effort with our 11,000 people has been primarily on the shoreline. That requires flat bottom, shallow draft, boats. These boats are just not suitable for wintertime conditions in areas such as the Shelikof Straits or Prince William Sound, where small craft warnings exist virtually every other day. We would be derelict if we allowed people in small, shallow draft boats to be out on these waters, and we just can't risk the safety of people.
Otto Harrison is the Exxon Corporation's Valdez Operations Manager, and our number here, if you want to talk to him, is 800-325-1100. We've got another caller waiting from Wayne, New Jersey. Wayne, New Jersey, what's your question?
My question is this. If the environment was oil-free before the spill, and Exxon has attempted to clean up of their mess since, are there still traces of oil present now? And what's going to be done with it in the future?
The answer is there are traces of oil, and some of what we're